Online, smartphone, DSTV channel 856 and on 92.7 and 106 FM.
This is 702.
7:34, thanks so much for staying with the Sunday edition of Weekend Breakfast. And of course, we're talking sustainability right now. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic has given an unprecedented opportunity to reflect and reassess our living and workspaces. And whilst green building is inextricably linked with wellness, its significance, especially this year, cannot be overemphasized. I'm joined now by Songo Didiza, founding director of Green Building Design Group, who recently took part in what I thought was a really interesting summit. And they were discussing the reality of a pandemic-proof architecture and the future of green building on the African continent. Songo, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you spending these moments with us.
Good morning, Rufilo. Good early morning, Rufilo. Good morning to the listeners as well. And happy Women's Month.
Thank you very much, actually. So then the same to you as well, Songo. Please talk to me about what the idea is behind pandemic-proof architecture. Is it a reality?
Sure, absolutely. I think particularly at a time like this, it's probably become more prevalent, and it's a topic of discussion, particularly coming out of the, like you, as you alluded to, the Ghana Green Building Summit that I was involved in. So when you talk about pandemic resilient cities and pandemic resilient continents, really we're saying that we need to do better in terms of how we relate with our climate. By particularly making them more resilient towards crises, right? And not just health crises, but also economic crises. And a practical example of this would be particularly the Alaska's case.
Sure.
We all know, for instance, that we've always had this relationship, this long love and hate relationship with coal, for instance, right?
Yes, yeah.
And one of the ways we're saying this is that we need to start doing away with coal by replacing with cleaner forms of energy. I mean, I know you've been monitoring the number of COVID cases. I don't know if you've been as meticulous as the same case that I have been, but a thought came to my mind at the other time, and I was like, well, if we were to monitor the impacts of the negative impacts of dirty industries the same way that we were to monitoring the COVID cases,
we'd be
so shocked. We'd be so shocked as a country because the reality is that coal kills, you know.
Sure.
And so what we're really talking about pandemic resilience rather, it's really a green recovery opportunity. And there are probably four ways that I could demonstrate this.
Yeah.
One is found in better buildings. Architects, the design fraternity is going to be challenged more and more post this COVID situation to start designing better buildings.
Oh.
We all know as a fraternity, buildings are one of the highest carbon emitters. Vis-a-vis coal, they use coal-based electricity. And what that particularly does is that being a high generator of carbon is you're also leading to the thing called sick building syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of buildings today are actually one of the reasons why people get sick because they haven't been designed properly.
Yeah.
So we're saying one of the ways in which you can start designing a pandemic resilient society is by having better buildings.
Sure.
And this does not only apply to the new buildings, but it also applies to the existing buildings.
Mm.
Because existing buildings make up 95% of the building stock that we currently have, not just in South Africa, but globally.
So let's expand a bit on that, Songo. And, you know, I'm thinking of the kinds of conversations that I've heard over the last few weeks within the sort of green building and design circles where, to the point of green buildings and existing buildings, a lot of the conversation is also around how we think about and build and design hospitals, for instance, where people are going to convalesce. And we worry right now about hospitals being a hotspot or a high infection rate place where there are COVID-19 positive patients recovering. And someone, a commentator spoke very, very simply about the fact that ceilings are low, ventilation is generally poor, and by ventilation meaning there's no fresh air coming in. Windows are sealed up. It's all circulated air and air conditioning, and pointing to, you know, very, very simple measures that don't seem to me as a layperson to have, you know, a high barrier to entry, but just simply the way we think about what buildings should look like and a contemporary and modern building should be.
Absolutely, and I think you hit the nail on the head right there. And that's probably one way in which can be addressed, by making sure that we've got natural ventilated buildings, hospitals, commercial buildings as a whole. We do need, I mean, like, I'm sure you can agree that, you know, nothing beats fresh air, right?
Sure.
So natural ventilation is probably top number one. So I would say you're quite right there. But also in terms of technology, because we live in a technology-driven world, what we're also finding now, some studies were done in Europe, but I think also in the United States, there's a causal link between ultraviolet light, you know, the ultraviolet light that is normally used the ER rooms.
Okay, yeah.
There's been increasing, like I said, there's increasing causality in that UV lighting can actually also be adapted to commercial buildings to also almost like increase the passive design benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And by we're fighting the viruses, and not just this particular virus, but viruses in general.
In general. Interesting. Yeah. Really, really interesting. So, Song, I guess my question then becomes, in conversations around pandemic-proof and resilience cities and resilient cities, the term smart city also then comes about. And what are the pillars of a smart city, and does it always mean, because I think immediately my mind goes to the Internet of Things and everything being plugged onto, you know, everything being digitized, computerized and being plugged in. Is that always necessarily the case? Is that what fundamentally a smart city looks like?
I would not say that, particularly coming from the fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
This I would say that definition is evolving at a fast pace. But I think we also need to be very realistic, particularly in our environment, South Africa being a developing country, being an African country, and this also came up in the summit.
Sure.
And I'm glad you raised that. We need to almost take this global concept of what a smart city, and you're quite right, as you alluded to, it's been this digitized city, highly resource-efficient city, but also it has to be a practical city, right?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in an African environment. And when I say practical, it has to be, for instance, if I am going to, well, we know the current scenario right now, where with mass transportation,
sure,
a large amount of our population uses taxis. Not everyone is in a single car use.
Mm-hmm.
And really, when you're talking smart, it boils down to the ability to implement smart policies.
Okay.
And the one elephant in the room that we can't run away from it from in our countries, particularly is this issue around energy.
Sure.
Without
Absolutely.
A good energy infrastructure, we can't move forward with any smart city planning process.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get our energy infrastructure right,
mm-hmm.
and there are opportunities to do that. I mean, I alluded to earlier. We need to start moving away from coal. There are already technologies in place that can scale up that process.
Sure.
One end is the municipal environment. There's now an opportunity, particularly with the decreasing prices of renewable energy technologies, there's now opportunity for municipalities to play the role of a distributor, not only distributor of electricity, but also generator of electricity, by actively powering up with the private sector entities.
Okay. So what... Carry on, Song. I thought the pause, it meant you were done. Carry on.
And obviously, there's other aspects of a smart city. It's not just the energy. It goes to, as far as I mentioned, mobility. But one area that doesn't get addressed a lot is that of nutrition.
Sure.
We really need to be eating better, right? I mean, I think one thing that came out, particularly out of this pandemic that we're in, is that we need to have a better relationship with our bodies and our immune systems. And one way we can address this and really to be to fit into that full nexus of a sustainability framework is that we need to be eating better, so better access to healthy food, healthy food is going to be, I believe, is going to be a thing of the past. And once again, this is where it can also intersect nicely with buildings.
Sure.
I don't know if you've seen buildings downtown in Johannesburg are starting to have food gardens in their buildings. So there's an opportunity not only to put solar PV on your rooftop, but there's an opportunity to start planting.
Sure.
And then, I mean, cities could functionally be mini farms, micro farms, as we're starting to see in places like Mabuneng, Crescent, and the like. And then the other area of mobility, Rafina, is why are we not being healthy individuals by cycling more, right? I don't know if you're aware.
Well, I believe at some point when cycling lanes, for instance, were being rolled out throughout the city, that became a very politicized, money spend by the city. Why aren't we cycling more? I think, in terms of the work that you do, there's a lot of also mindset change and cultural adoption that needs to happen because, as a society, we chase that German sedan and that nice vehicle that I will drive to work to and from alone, as opposed to being on a bike and sweating away and arriving at work or for my board meeting with beads of sweat on my forehead. So there's a lot of change and that needs to happen before that kind of uptake and understanding happens. Do you address issues like that, like a socio and cultural uptake of your ideas?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the ideas that I'm talking about, Rufino, they're not far-fetched, right? Just speaking, coming out of this Ghana-Canadian event, these things are already happening. A practical city example, for instance, is Rwanda.
Okay.
You've heard the case of Rwanda.
It's
probably one of the cleanest cities in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have these days where they will condone or rather partition certain parts of the city, and it will be closed off to motor vehicles or vehicles, and it's not a far-fetched thing. In South Africa, we just almost have to almost think outside the box, but making it more practical for us, right? Why, in the same breath of having the cycling mentality, it's not to say that now we must do away with taxis and transport. Why can we not have bicycle, yes, you're right, it's politicized, I agree. But we almost have to work together in meeting each other halfway to be one, a healthy society, but two, one that's really going towards a sustainable pathway.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
To the point of
ways to achieve that.
As we wrap up, Songo, and before I say goodbye to you, just to the point of those pandemic-proof cities, how does a city like ours, and we'll just focus on the city, not necessarily the whole country, but, like as you said, South Africa is a developing nation. We are dealing with so many stresses that require and want resources, and we were not to mention corruption and the squandering of public resources. So in all of this, how do you address spatial planning, our legacy of spatial planning, which has been unequal, unjust and problematic? And so leaves us in a problem where we're dealing with the pandemic, COVID-19. People cannot social distance because where are they living? How are they living? They are squashed into tiny houses or shacks or shelters that they've managed to acquire for themselves. But in terms of the spacing of those homes, it's impractical. So social distancing then no longer becomes a practical ask for so many people and too many people, as well as access to water. So from your perspective, and in your expertise, how do things like that and matters like that get fixed sustainably, affordably, in a way that everybody can look at, recognize as a suitable and reliable solution?
Hello.
Hi, Songo.
Hi, I lost you there for a minute.
Okay.
But so, I think I got to your point.
Yeah, how do we fix that with the few resources that we currently find ourselves at our disposal?
It's a tough one, right? I think having to, like you said, I mean, we already have to, the social ills that we need to address in South Africa. And for me, I want to move away slightly away from that. Like, we know that housing is a problem.
Sure.
20 years ago, South Africa's biggest problem was the housing backlog was sitting at a million houses, social houses, which is one of the reasons it resulted to the situation we have now of what we now call as leading to a case where we can't have social distancing,
sure,
because it's practically impossible. 20 years later, social housing backlog is still a million. So what's obviously quite the common thread here is this issue around jobs, right? So I want to move it slightly. I know what you asked, but I wanted to move it slightly to,
sure, go ahead,
the point around let's stop beating about the bush. Let's create the jobs that we need in society, and by creating the jobs, you'll be giving people access to the means to go and participate meaningfully in the economy by having access to housing, by having access to mobility, by having access to all these things that are required to be, you know, to be a middle class country.
Right.
And I want to bring it back to this green recovery opportunity, where I do believe that the jobs in the green industries are there. There's a huge opportunity, for instance, around retrofitting of current buildings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there as well. That's where you can start creating jobs within the various value chains of retrofitting the current buildings. I mentioned South Africa is currently sitting with a building stock of about 100,000 public buildings, right? And we're not saying by doing away with coal, you have to completely now, that means that the people that are in the coal industries won't have any jobs. There's an opportunity to reskill the current individuals the participants that are in those coal industries, the so-called dirty industries. You can reskill them towards the green economy. And by doing so, then you provide them with lifetime sustainable jobs where they will have access to the means to buy, properties and actually participate meaningfully in the property value chain by being property owners and not being renters.
Absolutely.
As you could like.
I've just
switched a bit.
No, you absolutely have, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate your insights. Songo, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been a pleasure getting some of your insights. We will hopefully catch up with you soon as we move this conversation forward. That's the founding director. Songo Didiza there, as we're talking about COVID-proof or pandemic-proof buildings, and she's a founding director of Green Building Design Group.